Good morning. A few things besides Mother's Day that you do need to know about today, too. Because he didn't say it, I will. Make sure you give Isaac a hug and a thank you. Today is Isaac's last Sunday with us. So if you have been wondering for months now, why does this guy keep leading singing, you're free of him. If you happen to enjoy his singing, like I did and I know Tristan did, then make sure you get in some extra Isaac time this morning and let him know that he was appreciated. You will never know how much you came in at just the right time and filled a gap for us. Thank you. But this church is a weird little church, isn't it? It's I always describe you guys to everybody who's not from here as a revolving door church. It is not surprising to me at all that on a day when Isaac is here for his last Sunday, you also need to meet Abigail. So please go meet Abigail. I can't say as many nice things about her as I can Isaac, because I haven't really gotten to know Abigail yet, but we'll do this again one day from the flip side, right? That's revolving door. People are always coming and going, and I think that speaks multitudes to the one who brings people into our lives when we need them the most. On that note, happy Mother's Day. My prayer for each of you today is that you find the time and ways to celebrate the moms in your life, and that you can find peace, and that you can find joy in that celebration. I'm so glad to see that so many of you get to celebrate today with your mom in person, face to face. You're the lucky ones. We're all jealous of you. Live it up. I know days like this are often more complicated than they first appear. For some, it's a joyful day filled with gratitude and celebration, and for others, it can carry grief, absence, longing, complicated memories. And for many, it's some mixture of all of those things, isn't it, all at once? But one of the things days like this remind us of the best is how deeply we are shaped by presence, by people who care for us, guide us, people who stay with us, who sacrifice for us, the people who steady us, sometimes quietly, sometimes imperfectly, often in ways that we just don't fully recognize at the time, and we don't see it until we look back and it's too late. And one of the strangest things about presence is that it's not always tied to visibility. There are people whose influence remains with us long after they leave the room. Voices we still hear, wisdom we still carry, love that continues shaping us when we move through this world day after day, even when that person is no longer physically beside us. I had one of those moments this week. For those of you who are keeping up with the drama that is Tristan's love of cowboy hats, I have successfully made from scratch a custom cowboy hat for Tristan this week, and it doesn't look bad. I'll even show you pictures. She's even agreed to wear it in public. And I was telling a couple of close friends about that, and I got a message from Joyce Voss. You don't know Joyce Voss. Everybody should. If one day when you meet Joyce Voss, your life will be better. Joyce Voss taught me how to tie my shoes when I was in her preschool Sunday school class. And still to this day, whenever I make something, she tells me I did a good job. It's no different than when I was 3 years old painting a picture for her in Sunday school. I don't even know if she looked at the picture of the hat or if she actually likes it. It doesn't matter. She just knows that she needs to say that I did a good job. And I have not seen Joyce Voss in person, face-to-face, in, I don't know, 25 years. But every time I come through town and she happens to be there, I still know the security code to get past her security system on her house and how to get in it. She keeps the door unlocked in the garage, and I know the code to get in the garage, and I know that I can go in there and raid her fridge because she's always had an open house policy. If the front porch light is on, you're always welcome to invade her space and stay as long as you want. She adopts everybody who doesn't have a home. She takes international students in Abilene who don't have families in town and becomes their mother. Mother's Day is full of people like that, isn't it? It's a presence that stays with you. I know I can still count on Joyce Voss to congratulate me when I tie my shoes, and I know that she'll be there even after she's long gone. Which is weird because most of us, we connect presence with what we can see, yes? If someone is physically there, then we feel secure in that presence. If they're absent, it can begin to feel like they're not there. But you've got to admit, there's been people that have been in your life from time to time that when they're not there, they're still there, right? I'm not crazy. Somebody nod. Say, yeah, okay. If they're absent, I guess it can begin to feel like we're on our own, but underneath, that's just a very human fear. When we start to wonder what happens when the people we rely on are no longer right beside us. And that is the fear sitting directly underneath this conversation with Jesus in John 14. And I want you to listen for how he speaks to people who are afraid that they're about to lose him. The word of the Lord from John 14, verses 15 through 21. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to be with you forever. This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him because he abides with you, and he will be in you. I will not leave you orphaned. I am coming to you. In just a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. And on that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you are in me, and I am in you. And they who have my commandments and keep them are those who love me. And those who love me will be loved by my Father. And I will love them and reveal myself to them. And for all you mothers in the room, you know this story because this is what happens every time you try to leave a room by yourself. This is not something endearing. This is just the constant nagging that is motherhood, isn't it? This constant clinging fear of if I can't see them, they're gone. Turns out we never grow out of that fear, and we just drag it right into our religion, into our faith, into our relationship with Christ. That anxiety underneath this passage is not difficult to hear once you notice it. Jesus is preparing them for absence. He's speaking about leaving, about a change that they don't fully understand yet. And beneath all their questions is just this primal fear that feels painfully familiar. What happens when the person I'm relying on is gone? And Jesus answers that fear with a sentence that carries enormous and undeserved tenderness. I will not leave you orphaned. Now again, I know you mothers, you say these words too, but you say it in a different tone. I think Jesus is trying to be compassionate here. I think he's trying to be reassuring. He does not speak to them as students that are trying to solve a theological puzzle. He doesn't speak to them as a people who are just simply afraid of being left alone generically. They're afraid that the guidance, the steadiness, the presence that they've relied on is about to disappear. We know that fear. Sometimes dramatically through grief, loss, sometimes much more quietly in seasons when life feels heavy, uncertain, in moments where we feel like we are carrying more than we know how to hold. It's in those places where the deeper question underneath everything else is just simply, what if I really am all alone in this? I think what's striking is that Jesus does not answer their fear by promising that nothing's going to change. He does not promise that they will always be able to see him standing right there. He does not remove any of the uncertainty of what's coming next. Instead, he promises a different kind of presence in another form. I will ask the Father, and he will give you another, not a different, another advocate to be with you forever. Not a replacement, not merely a memory, not the lingering influence of a teacher whose words survive after he is gone. He speaks about this abiding presence, something deeper, something closer than they yet understand. You know him, Jesus says, because he abides with you already. He will be in you. And that changes everything about how presence works. The risen Christ is not found in longing for what is no longer visible, but in the quiet, abiding presence of the Spirit. Jesus does not answer their fear by staying physically where he is. He answers it by refusing to leave them alone at all. He says, I know it looks like I'm leaving, but in fact, I'm going to be closer than ever. I'm going to be right with you the whole time. And the language throughout this passage keeps moving deeper into that reality. Just like I am in the Father, and you are in me, and I am in you, presence is no longer simply some kind of external proximity. It becomes a mutual indwelling, a shared life, a communion that cannot be reduced to a physical distance. What's important here is how quiet that promise is. Jesus does not describe a spectacle or an emotional intensity. He doesn't tell them, you're going to feel like I'm there with you the whole time. The language is a language of abiding, remaining, dwelling. And the Spirit is not presented as something dramatic or some interruption to ordinary life. It's a continuation. It's the continuing presence of Christ within it. And that means the disciples are not being prepared for abandonment. They're being prepared to discover Christ's presence differently than before. I'm going to be with you, it's just going to be different. Many of us still experience seasons where God feels quiet like that. Seasons where faith does not feel vivid or emotionally certain. Moments where we find ourselves wishing for clearer reassurance or something unmistakable or something that we could point to and say, yep, there, that's it. That proves that God is with me. But quiet presence is not the same thing as absence either. One of my favorite writers once said that we experience God either on the highest mountains or in the darkest valleys. Those are the places where you're most likely to encounter God. And I think he's right, but I also think he's wrong. Don't tell him. I mean, you can't. He died like 600 years ago. But I think he's also wrong, because that means there's this whole 95% of material in between, this gray maybe territory, and that's where most of us currently always reside. We're not always jumping from the highest mountains to the lowest moments. We kind of wish it worked that way, but we don't. We live in this medium blah. And God is also there. And I think what this author was trying to say all those years ago was it's easiest to see God in those high moments and in those low moments, but that doesn't mean that God isn't with you the rest of the time either. It's harder to see it. It looks different. There are people in this room that are carrying exhaustion that nobody else can fully see. There are people in here that are caring for aging parents and don't know how to do it. And there are people in here that are caring for children and don't know how to do that either. And worse, there are people in here trying to do both at the same time. Navigating the uncertainty about the future, carrying grief that still arrives, and it always arrives unexpectedly. No matter how prepared you think you are for a grief in a moment of life, you're never ready. There are people here who are trying to remain hopeful in situations that have no hope left, who are trying to remain loving when they are tired, who are trying to keep going when they are not entirely sure where the strength is coming from. It's not a highest moment of your life. It's not really the lowest. It's just an average day that ends in Y. And often, we expect God's presence to mean that those things don't exist, that they get sorted out, that they immediately change, that fear disappears, that grief resolves, that clarity arrives. But if we're being honest, much of the Christian life is learning to recognize a quieter kind of presence than that. Something that stays with you in the midst of all that medium gray blah. The Spirit does not always arrive as a spectacle. It's great when it does, when it descends like a dove, or whenever there's flaming tongues of fire surrounding the disciples on Pentecost. Those are great moments. They're not the norm. Sometimes, oftentimes, more often than not, the presence of Christ shows up as the strength to just make it to the end of the day. the ability to take the next faithful step. The persistence of hope when despair makes more sense. Or perhaps we should say the stubbornness of hope when despair makes more sense. It's the strange steadiness that keeps holding you together even though you know you're falling apart and everything is uncertain. And sometimes the clearest sign that Christ is with us is not that everything changes, but that somehow we are still being carried through it. And I hope that that changes how we understand what it means for God to be here. Presence is not dependent on our ability to perceive it perfectly or proximity. The disciples are afraid that they would be abandoned, left to figure things out on their own. And Jesus answers that fear, not with distance, but with this abiding presence of the Spirit. Which I think means that there may be moments when God feels quieter than you want, less visible than you hoped, less dramatic than you expected. I mean, we all expect the voice of God to be the booming voice of James Earl Jones. But 99% of the time, you just find it in that quiet wind, that breeze. Quiet does not mean that God is absent. The Spirit remains. Christ still abides with his people. You are not orphaned. You are not abandoned. The Spirit remains. And so we just take the most important step that we can. The next one. And that is what we are given here, in a place like this, on a day like this, as we gather around a table like this. Jesus promises, I am in you. I'm right there. Not as some occasional in and out presence, not a temporary closeness, an abiding life together. This church might sometimes feel like a revolving door as people come and go, but the one thing that never leaves and always leaves is that abiding presence of Christ. And so I know that we're going to miss Isaac, and I also know that he's going to go off with our Lord and Savior to do amazing things at whatever church he lands at next, and I'm so glad they get to have him like we did. And I know that God's going to bring us new people who are going to do amazing things here and then somewhere else, because that presence goes with us everywhere we go. And at this table, that promise is not explained to us from a distance. It is given. We come to this table not because we've managed to hold tightly to God and didn't let him leave the room. Like, we're not the toddlers clinging to our dad's leg and letting him drag us around the house to this table. That's not what this meal is. We come to this table because God continues to hold himself near to us. You know, we have these moments as children where we cling to our parents. But the amazing thing about this John 14 passage, if you hear nothing else, just hear this, is this is that moment where the tables turn and Jesus says, you've been trying to hold on to me, but what you don't realize is that I'm the one clinging to you and you can't shake me. You can't get rid of me. I'm not going to let go. Not going to let go. We come here carrying all the ordinary realities of our lives, that blah, medium gray. But we also bring our gratitude along with our exhaustion, our grief, our uncertainty. And here, Christ continues to meet his people. At this table, we do not receive proof that we are never afraid. We receive the presence that refuses to leave us alone. Here, Christ abides with his people. Here, the Spirit remains. Here, we are held in the life of God. And also, wherever you go for lunch, and wherever you take your Sunday afternoon nap, and when you go back to work, and whenever you're sitting alone arguing with somebody in a car shop trying to get your car fixed for the second month in a row, or whenever you are in an emergency room because you realize you can't go down the stairs anymore without falling, and or fill in the blank. Whenever you go off to get your doctoral degree under your belt, whenever you embark on new chapters in your life, all those places. The disciples were afraid Jesus was going to leave them, and he smiles and grabs his friends and says, the truth is, you're never going to get rid of me. That is what we celebrate at this table, this week and every week. Let's stand and sing.